Are you ready?
Well, I have met my match.
Oh, that's good.
Oh. I've changed my mind on some things. And,
I
know. Well, the first part that I said, I think, is still okay. But I'm trying to give you a bird's eye view of the whole thing. Because you lose the forest for the trees. There's so much detail, and much of it is contradictory, that I think I may have finally seen the pattern. And if so, it may help us. Well, the first part, I think, was not hard. We talked about the spirit of times, and the spirit of the deaths. And then we had the murder of Siegfried. That wasn't too hard. And then we started with what I'm going to call the first manifestation of the transcendent function. By that I mean what I think is going on in the med book is we're seeing the transcendent function at work. And the way the transcendent function works is it presents a conflict. The conflict is endured, and the conflict is then resolved by the presentation of an image which contains the previous conflict.
Say that all again, nice and slow.
I think we're seeing the transcendent function, and the way that transcendent function works is it presents a conflict, and then we have to endure the conflict. And the bad coffee. I just fail on myself.
Good
luck,
Kleenex.
And there's no napkin.
Even though we're
not.
There's Kleenex.
I'm in hell. I don't know
why. Gary, there's some Kleenex over there.
Oh.
That's right. Okay, we're enduring the conflict.
So we're enduring the conflict. And if the conflict is endured, and this is, I think, one of Jung's absolute major contributions, if the conflict is endured, the unconscious generates an image of the new us that can contain what was once felt as a conflict. Another way to put that is, it generates an image which represents the center point between the two opposites, that's the same thing as the larger image which contains the conflict. And that's individuation.
Now slow down.
Yeah.
Okay. That is
all right. An image of the new us that can contain the conflict.
Yes.
And then you redefined that.
That new thing can either be seen as the center or a larger image.
A new center, would you
say? A new center.
Of consciousness? Or between the
of the
two.
Total personality, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of the self.
Yeah.
And so the larger image is a wider view of who you are.
And the self, and
how you fit into life.
Right, it's a wider understanding of yourself.
Okay.
And a wider living of yourself.
So basically, we're seeing the movement from 1 to 4 here.
From 1 to 2 to 3, and then 4 is I don't know if it's necessarily contained in this document. 4 is when that 3 collides with the world.
4 is when 3.
Yeah. No, people who have had revelations are notoriously self-righteous. Like reform smokers. And that is a wider personality, but there's no guarantee that wider personality can connect with the world, because there's something inhuman about this new state, because it's a revelation of pure truth. But the world's not interested in pure truth. So to communicate your new understanding, you have to become human again and find out how to share the thing that you just recognized. And that's the shift from 3 to 4. That's, of course, what Nietzsche, those of you who Nietzsche didn't do. Nietzsche proclaimed these truths. And in a way, they're phenomenally accurate, but it was so grating, nobody could stomach it. And what Jung did then after the Red Book is spend his whole life saying, now how am I going to communicate this stuff? I'm going to communicate it by presenting dreams. I'm going to communicate it by giving examples, by looking at mythological paradigms that express it, and so on. So this is pretty much 1 to 3.
So when you say the one, is that at the death of Siegfried or before?
The one would be the death of Siegfried.
And then the two is the conflict.
Well, the first conflict was the conflict between spirit and matter.
Right.
Okay. Remember, the pretty girl and the old man, Salome and Elijah, and so on. And that resolved, finally, in Ishtar. Mm-hmm. So we had death of Siegfried, one. We had the two, which was, one of the twos was the succulent girl, the other was this abstract figure of meaning and wisdom, that was two, and then three was Ishtar.
And so we go through those over and over and over again.
Well, and then we start a second cycle, I believe. Carol rightly pointed out, but Ishtar comes out singing like Hello Dolly, I'm the sun. We just thought we left the sun. So that new figure is a progression which does synthesize the previous two, but it itself has got something that needs to change within it. That's always the way it goes. The new wholeness is wholeness temporarily, but then it will be challenged again by another cycle.
So it's a spiral.
It's a spiral. Yep.
So the three, and then the three becomes the one.
Three becomes the one.
Or the four becomes the one on the new side.
Yeah.
So Ishtar is a new synthesis.
He's a new synthesis.
Of
spirit and matter.
Of spirit and matter, and yet he needs to be refined or worked on.
Right. And that's where we are now.
So he's the new Siegfried, right?
Ironically, he has a lot in common with Siegfried.
Okay.
On the one hand, he has become more human through defeat. On the other hand, Jung starts off again as if we hadn't been through the first cycle. And all these things, I am the sun, I've created God. That's insanity. That's another Siegfried. And so I think where we are now, and I'll put it up and I'll tell you what I thought previously and what I think now. We're getting a presentation of two opposites. But what we've seen so far is only one of those opposites. And the words that so we've got spirit and matter. Leading to Ishtar.
So you're saying Ishtar is one side of the opposite?
Right. Well, yeah, I think the problem with working with the unconscious, nothing is ever clearly one thing. There are elements of Ishtar which are a synthesis, and we shouldn't touch them.
But Ishtar comes out of the birth canal, so to speak, emphasizing his solar aspect.
But that's one of his aspects.
Right. That his, like I say, his solar aspect.
Yeah.
Not that he doesn't have other
aspects. Right. So what the next cycle is, he picks up on that solar aspect. That's where Ishtar is saying, I am the sun. Jung says, I am the sun. The ego is emphasized again. But many times Jung says, I am God. I have created God. There's no self there, see, anymore. It's all back to the ego. And we have all this talk about God. I create God. I reformulate God. I. And this discussion about evil. Now, what we have done up to now is probe all of this stuff. And in other words, we've probed one of the opposites. We're going to get the next opposite pretty soon. I think the next opposite is Christianity.
What happened to evil?
Evil. Here's evil.
I mean, but that's the other side of the sun, isn't it?
Yeah. This is all one opposite.
Right.
One pole.
Oh, one opposite.
Yeah, this is all one. That's where I led you astray before.
Okay.
I took this as a duality.
Yeah.
I think that's wrong.
Oh.
Now, wait, I'm confused. What do you think? You took what as a duality?
Well, before when I explained this, I thought what we were dealing with was the sun and then evil as the two opposites.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that's correct.
Do you think he was just exploring all the aspects of that solar?
Yeah. All of this actually belongs together.
Okay.
This is what I think now. I reserve the right to change my mind again. But, because this is hard for me.
So the sun and evil aren't the opposites?
No. I don't think so.
And yet within the solar aspect there are opposites, so...
But that's the master confusion.
Okay.
So, again, remember, Jung's not thinking this out. He's just mm-hmm. letting all of this stuff come up and he's writing it out. Okay.
So then, you're saying Christianity was an opposite to...
All of this stuff.
To what?
To the solar aspect, to the ego, to God, to evil.
What God? Isdabar?
Well, to the God that Jung says he's creating.
So Jung's, okay.
And evil's an aspect of God, then?
Yeah.
Right.
Christianity is the opposite to this God Jung feels he's is being created.
I think so.
Okay, so would that lead you to say that this Isdabar thing would be like Yahweh, because Yahweh has everything.
Yeah, he has a Yahweh aspect.
And then we go into Christianity, which only sees one side.
Right. See, both of these are partial positions.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to see him suddenly say, but Christianity, we can't throw that out. So he puts this, I believe he puts this in juxtaposition with this. And what we're going to see then, the third, is the image of the tree and the image of good and evil. And a reinterpretation of Christianity and a reinterpretation of all that stuff that went before about, I am so powerful, I've created God, I am the Son. So, really, again, assuming I'm right, here I think we've got the revelation of Jung's first years of work. And here we've got the revelation of Answer the Joke. In other words, after Jung's heart attack in 1946, I don't know if he ever contradicted this, but he certainly deepened it by bringing in evil and bringing in synchronism. And not throwing up Christianity, but reinterpreting it. Not ever throwing up the importance of the ego, but putting it in the service of something. Here, the ego isn't serving itself. Now that's what I think is going on. Time will tell.
So would we consider Christianity a development for the ego then? Because it does, the ego then serves the church.
Well, the ego serves the self.
Eventually. But I'm saying in this dichotomy where you have the solar aspect against mm-hmm. Christianity, the ego then is learning through Christianity how to to serve something.
Serve something, yeah. But we'll see final. What it ends up with is more destruction than, well, as much destruction as benefit.
Because it's concentration on still the solar, it contains a solar aspect.
It contains a solar aspect.
Yeah.
And I think we'll see, I think we'll probably get to it today. I think we really see in these visions all the damage done to these young people by priests. We see the horrible effect of a religion of the spirit.
Not to mention the nasty nuns.
Well, the nasty nuns are part of it. Yeah. See, the nasty nuns have no way to live out their instincts.
Now, there haven't been wonderful nuns. I'm sure there have been.
There have been, yes. But I don't know anybody I've worked with where we haven't spent time overcoming the harm done to them by the church. Everybody. And, you know, these theologians will say, oh, well, but that's a misinterpretation of Christianity. And, oh, well, that's one aspect. And I have to say, then, why does everyone dream of being damaged by the church? Everyone. And I think that's what Jung is coming up with. He sees Christianity as one of the opposites. He won't throw it out, but he also won't accept it. And he transforms it. And there, if you look at, you know, the current of European thought, he is unique. Where everyone else said, throw it out. He said, no. Don't throw it out. We have to reappropriate it.
So you were talking about a transcendent function has to deal with two opposite paradigms, essentially.
Yeah.
We have here then the God, the evil, ego paradigm, the Christianity paradigm, and these are the ones that that have to be endured in order for him to come up with his transcendent vision.
Right. Yeah.
The solar and evil that you said are part of one, is evil the absence of the?
No, I think, see, solar is essentially power, and evil is power. That whole left side is power. I mean, just think of the solar politicians, Rick Perry and those guys, you know. Everything, you know, he's got the right. This kind of sexuality is bad. This is bad. This is bad. All he's doing is pushing his own agenda. In the, what he considers the clarity of light, but it's sheer power. What about everyone else who doesn't fit his little box? Well, shape him up or shoot him, I guess. So, that hopefully will give us a context. I may have to reevaluate it, but that's where I am at the moment. What I didn't see before is that Christianity is one of the opposites. I thought it was the solution.
But the solution?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I first thought. But I think that's
in your reading of the Red
Book. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Because it was a phase?
Well, because of the image of crucifixion that comes up.
Okay.
But I think we'll have the image of the man crucified between two crazy people. I think one of those crazy people is Christianity. And the other crazy is the solar. Because pretty soon he's going to go to the Imitation of Christ, Thomas a Kempis. Sort of a medieval... I think there are even workshops still, I bet, given on that stuff, on how do you emulate the life of Christ. To be religious means to live life like Christ lived life. And so Jung is going to come up with that and say, well, maybe that's the solution. And he's going to say, no, it's not, because my job isn't to live Christ's life, it's to live my life.
And that's the essence of the imitation of Christ.
And, well, that's where he's going to take it. But
yes.
That's not what's in the text.
That's not what the church thinks. But.
Or what, I don't even think what Thomas was saying.
Mm-hmm. But Jung sees that to be the true meaning of,
yeah.
of it.
Right. So, for Jung, then, the religious task isn't to imitate Christ, but to fulfill yourself.
Yes, and he feels that that is the true meaning of Christ that was overlooked.
Right. And so that's why he won't give up Christianity. It's got the idea of committing yourself to a deeper process. He just wants to redefine what that deeper process is. But that deeper process is non-ego. It's the transcendent function, and where the European intellectuals of this day would say, well, you don't have to serve anything. And he's saying, oh, no, you got to serve something. So that's what I'm anticipating.
Could you say then, Gary, that he takes the crucifixion and the tearing apart as one aspect, whereas Christianity believes maybe you should martyr yourself to some cause.
Yeah.
And he believes that, yes, you have to serve with something, but you also have to go the path of loving life and...
Not necessarily.
No.
I think you've got to go the path that's there for you to go.
He says something like, you have to serve your own authenticity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whatever so, that may be.
Yeah, so if you're, if you're, what was that guy's name who tried to kill Hitler? Whatever his name was. Something like that.
Bonhoeffer.
Well, Bonhoeffer was part of that group. Your job is to kill somebody. I don't know if I told you, one of my friends in Zurich met the son of that guy. Mm-hmm. He now lives in Zurich. And the guy said the movie, was it The Valkyries?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty accurate.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm amazed they let his family live.
Yeah. That might have been just, they executed them just at the very end of the war, I think. That might be why.
Like long,
okay.
They
killed
him 3 days before the war.
Was it 3 days? Yeah. Yeah, it's very close to the end of the war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Von Stauffenberg. Is the guy. The guy, his son lives in Zurich now. So, hopefully that will add some clarity. And what we did last week then was just look at all those contradictory things Jung was saying about evil and creating God and so on. And I think the reason they are so contradictory is they're just one pole and they're going to call forth a reaction from the unconscious. That confusion that we feel is going to also create a response from Jung's unconscious, which we'll see coming up.
For me, the part on evil wasn't too terribly confusing because he speaks about all the ways that it works upon us invisibly and why what its value is. It seemed to me he spoke of that very clearly.
Yes, though only in one sense, because just look at where we stopped, 290.
Mm-hmm.
Why did my soul not tear out the eye of the evil one?
And by the way, that's where I got the fact that the soul does not blind the devil. Last week we spoke about that.
Okay, yeah.
Because that's her only power over the devil, isn't it? To have the power to blind,
right.
Yet she does not.
But she doesn't, right. But if she had done it, she would have come completely under the spell of the evil one.
Yeah, why?
I don't know why. But look at the end. The evil one is holy. If the evil one is holy, what would be wrong about coming under the spell of him?
Well, maybe you can't come completely under the spell of either of the opposites.
But don't you see the contradiction in that paragraph?
I just have to keep redefining things as you go. I mean, the evil one is holy because he represents, he's the priest of evil. You know?
Yeah.
He's holy because he's carrying the burden of representing evil.
But that's the opposite.
But that's a conflict with the statements like, oh my God, my soul is possessed by evil.
Well,
which you said just a minute before.
Yes. But isn't that what Jung is all about? Carrying paradoxical information like that? And then
not,
the third thing arises?
Not to this extent, I don't think.
Really?
No.
That's it. The ego has to serve the self, but yet it can't completely serve the self without any reservations. It also has to relate to the self and talk to it, as Job did to God, and say, this is not right.
Yeah. Yeah. See, he's not doing that here.
So that's where you get to go.
Did that sentence above the evil one is holy speak to that? You should not harm him above all men is
high,
since the most beautiful would not exist if the evil one did not see it and long for it. And, you know, when we see evil around us, I think we long for the opposite. I mean, it does bring us into relationships with the other.
So would you say to a person who's been in Auschwitz that was a good thing because it taught me how to enjoy beauty? See, if you take what he's saying here to its logical conclusion, I just think it's flat out wrong.
I wouldn't say it was a good thing, but you might say it helped me enjoy beauty.
I think they'd want to kill you if you said that.
We're talking about the political correct statements here. We're talking about psychological truth, and there have been survivors of the concentration camps, psychologists, for example, who have said that their own salvation was based upon their experience.
I still don't think they would say it was a good thing.
Well, no, that
or a holy thing,
but
even.
They wouldn't say that in a public address, but they might write it in their book.
Mm-hmm. Well, my point is, all of these are partial truths.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them stand alone.
Right.
Yeah, that's it.
And we're going to be moving towards a way of addressing evil that isn't a partial truth. But see, again, that's the way the unconscious works. It throws up things which are true, but only to a certain extent. And what crazy people do is they seize on that partial truth and then make it a complete truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. So you can get a schizophrenic scene. The evil one is holy. I'm going to shoot the governor. Well, yes, it is holy, but let's look at the wider context. And see, here we get each piece and not the wider context. And as I said originally, I thought this was a portrayal of the opposites, and I may change my mind, but I don't think so.
So you thought that hell versus Izdubar Izdubar's solar aspect was the opposite.
That's what I first thought.
And he did sort of, you have a point, because he did sort of speak of it that
mm-hmm.
way.
That,
you know, if the God goes up, then I'm left, you know, then this overtakes me.
Yeah.
So he actually did put them as opposites.
Yes.
Himself.
Yes. Though I think the real opposite is going to come when we get into Christianity. That's going to be set against all of this stuff.
But that's the spiral. You have the opposites. They become one. They become, they go from the third, they go to the fourth, and then they become an opposite because you're into the new
conflict,
the
second. Okay, so far?
Well,
no?
You can say that.
Is anyone drowning? Well, because it gets worse.
Well, I am having a little trouble with Christianity as an opposite.
Well, then hang on.
But y'all hang on.
Because I think we get to it here. Sacrificial myrrh. So keep hold your questions, because I think here we get the presentation of Christianity as the other opposite.
To
all those things.
All
left.
Of those.
Yeah.
We want to look at the history of his mission.
Yeah. Let's see. Whoops. It's image 76. We're on page 290 of the text.
Oh, 76. Okay. I'm sorry.
Now, another reason I said what I said Remember, we had that, which we took as the birth of Izdebar, the energy that's coming after Izdebar was in the egg. So, and then that's when we start getting all this talk about how big I am, what I'm creating God, I have the sun in me, I have the energy in me. And that looks very good. See, more effervescence, the birth. Oops. He's all tangled up. And we talked about that as the relationship between Tony and Emma, the three entangled. So another reason I said what I said was I think the pictures are in advance of his own understanding. And he's realizing, in the unconscious realizing, all this talk about creating and making God and filled with energy, look where it gets you. To a stasis. And that's why I think this is such a new beginning. That is anticipating the realization, all of this glorification of the sun and desire and passion, it leads itself to a cul-de-sac. And those cones represent that insight.
That's insight. Okay,
image
72.
I think. And we're going to see these codes now come up again in the pictures today where he's talking about locking up the sun. He's never talked about locking up the sun before. And that comes, unfortunately, in a footnote.
So the cones are a cul-de-sac?
No, I think this is the cul-de-sac. All that this freed up desire has simply led to a mess. And I think, you know, that's what hedonists don't understand. That if you really live your desire, you will end up in a situation that frustrates desire.
Image 71.
And Jung is figuring this out the hard way. Oops, wrong direction, sorry. So, we did this, and now we're here. And the reason, I went back, that's how I understand these shapes, you see?
Yeah, they're still there.
They're still there. So this is what he's going to start addressing.
And behind them is the flower. Mm-hmm. In a slightly different shade of, it's a pinkish shade.
What do you mean? Where's the flower?
Behind the worms.
Oh, yes. I didn't even see
it. Well, you see it.
Yeah, I see it now. Yeah.
There is one of the leaves.
Oh.
Or even part of the flower itself, and then you see partly hidden by the top of the D is the main flower shape. It goes all the way up to the top. See it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All the way up past
all
the
D.
There's the top line of it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then you know, there's lines here, lines there, and then one up, and then one up
mm-hmm.
there.
A little clearer here, but
killing the light, and
flower.
Really? I thought it was like a lily.
You know, lily, something, it's a lily family.
Yeah, there it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
There it is.
Yeah. There it is.
There it is.
Oh, yeah.
There it is.
But, you know, as far as color theory goes, I look at that image and I go, ugh. It's like, oh, that's sickening. And then I went on with his first words, and the first thing he mentions is nausea.
Uh-huh.
So that, to me, was...
You're in doubt.
That to me was an expression of that nausea he was
mm-hmm.
faced with.
And now we have an even bigger tangled mess than
the
original
three.
Although you probably connect all of those somehow, but yeah, it's like it's multiplied.
And remember before we talked about the fact that neuroscience has found that emotions are actually in our blood,
mm-hmm.
if you use blood as a symbol for our body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as though this murder is a symbol for the awakening of his feeling
mm-hmm.
in his body.
Well, that's hold that thought, because I have a different angle on it.
He's really made to feel here.
Okay, that I can accept.
That's what all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, did you remember, I don't know if we need to go through all the details, but he goes into this valley. I'm in the first column, page 290, second half. And he sees the body of a small girl, covered with terrible wounds, smeared with blood.
Does he at first think she's a marionette? Is that what he's saying?
Let's see.
Is that what he's saying, or is that something that the girl has held?
No,
you think they're separate? He writes as though they are, but then I wondered to myself, well...
And a few steps further...
You know how sometimes when you see something that's so outrageous, you think it's not real?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, maybe at first he thought it was a marionette, and then he walks closer, and you see...
Well, the two could be conflated here. I mean,
they
both represent the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The broken...
It has a broken head. I think you're right, Carl.
And then in the second column, he has to eat her liver. Mm-hmm. Which his soul is saying will be healing.
Realize at first that it's his soul.
Yeah, S is for a soul, I think, isn't it?
But at first she says she's the soul of the child, doesn't she?
Well, at the end of the page it says, how familiar you are, who are you? She says, I am your soul. So he evidently doesn't until...
He doesn't know that until
okay.
then.
Yeah.
Because she says that they're on the soul of the child first.
And then, so what I want to look at is, who is this girl? What is the liver? How does that transform his soul? Now, I think the key sentence is at the top of 291. Another reason I said what I said here today. The sacrifice has been accomplished. Here I am. The divine child, the image of the God's formation, is slain. Let's just hold that thought. What does it mean that that girl is the image of God's as he is known? Let's put it that way.
Is it the formation that Jung has just made?
No, I don't think so.
Image of the divine child is all that undeveloped capacity that can lead to a God.
I don't think so. I'll tell you what I think, and you can, I'm not saying I'm right, but we can bat this around. I think that child is the effect of Christianity on the soul.
Can you say more about that?
Well, yeah. I take my clue from Answer to Job. I just grabbed this thing at the door. This is from Edinger's book, Transformation of the God Image, page 35. He's quoting you. And just as there is a secret tie between the wound and the weapon, so the affect corresponds to the violence of the deed that caused it. Just as there is as a secret tie between the wound and the weapon, so the affect corresponds to the violence of the deed that caused it. In other words, what we see here is a wounded girl because God is a wounder. That's what we don't want to look at. It's not a crucified Christ. It's a mutilated girl. See, there are two very different images. It's not a crucified man, it's a mutilated girl. And when he says that child is an image of God's formation, I understand that to mean this is what our understanding of God leaves us with. Damage.
Damage to our feelings.
To our feelings, to our body, to our self-worth.
You mean the Christian understanding?
That the prevailing Christian understanding leads to harm, so that this mutilated girl is the mutilated soul of all those kids that were sexually abused, for example. And as I've said, I don't think I work with anybody where we don't spend time overcoming all the either don'ts that are ridiculous or the feeling of being worthless that feelings of being worthless that have come from mean church authorities.
So God as wounders, God in Job.
It's the God in Job. It's the God, it's the effect of all of that stuff on the left.
Well, could you say that his own formation of a God that we have just seen and the formation of the Christian God are conflated here
in these
paragraphs?
Yeah. So maybe you're right that if we take that what he has formed has been just a kind of repeat of what exists in our conventional understanding of God.
And he says we have to go through that, that we have to go through all the stages of...
He does?
Not here. But isn't the idea that in our spiritual growth, we sort of go through the stages of the spiritual growth of the human society?
Certainly, he doesn't say that it was an error to go through that those stages of growth in the society. Whether we want to apply that to the individual or not, I think kind of depends on the individual.
Yeah, yeah. I see.
How is this different from what you were talking about first, the transcendent function?
What we're getting now is a recognition of the shadow of everything that he has just espoused.
Christianity is a shadow.
That Christianity is itself that left side. It's got a solar god. It's about power. Pretty soon, he's going to say, wait a minute, we can't throw Christianity out. So he said two utterly contradictory things. And then he's going to find a way to resolve that all. No, we can't throw Christianity out. We can't accept it as it is, and we can't throw it out. We've got to reinterpret it. And instead of following the outer Christ, we need to follow the self. Instead of sacrificing our sexuality, our desire to acquire material things, we need to sacrifice those things that are not in line with the self. The self may very well want you to have a sexual relationship. It may very well want you to have a nice big house. Does that make sense? He interiorizes the whole thing and then re-examines how what Christianity has described is true on a certain level.
So it seems to be saying that this sacrifice is symbolic of his life force, as he puts it, being withdrawn from the image of the God. So it's free to...
No, this sacrifice is what happens if he doesn't do that.
At the end of the first paragraph, isn't he saying that this sacrifice has allowed him to withdraw his life force so that he can go on for his other formation?
Through this act, is that where you are?
Yeah.
Through this act, he testifies that he is a man. No, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
He is a man, that he recognizes good as well as evil, and then he destroys the image of the God's formation through withdrawing his life force, with which he also dissociates himself from the God. This occurs for the salvation of the soul, which is the true mother of the divine child. So I understand that to mean he's realizing the error of his previous formation. And he's withdrawing his allegiance to that. He's withdrawing his allegiance from everything he's just said to reevaluate what he's just said, because he realizes what it leads to.
That's what I was trying to say, but you said much better.
Well, that was pure luck. And you see, I think we saw that in the snakes that were wrapped around, that he's realizing this formation I've just put forward leads to a mess. Let's start over here.
But he hasn't really dragged Christianity into it yet.
No, but he will.
Right. Okay, so...
But we're saying all these words could apply to the Christian
formation
itself.
Yeah.
You could easily conflate the two.
Because pretty soon he's going to start saying, well, throw Christianity out. And he says, wait a minute, I can't throw it out. And I think that's a reference back here.
What does conflate mean?
Oh, it's is bringing the same idea together in two images.
Okay, like flowing in, flowing together. Mm-hmm.
Do I have that right?
Well, if you read this paragraph, you could read it as talking about Jung himself, or you could read it as talking about the Christianity. Either one. You could read it either way. You could conflate those two.
Or combine might be a rough synonym.
Or a substitute one for the other in this paragraph.
Two images that represent the same thing can be mutually substituted for one another.
Okay.
Is that
correct? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But synonyms
always have just slightly variation. I warned you, and it's still going to get worse. Sorry.
Okay.
I didn't write this damn thing. Don't blame me.
Well, I don't know, Gary.
Gotta blame somebody.
Yeah. Gotta blame somebody. Why not me?
You know the messenger?
Yeah. I guess I'm wondering why this is a feminine child.
Yeah, exactly.
And the importance of what happened to the feminine during Christianity.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's
absolutely. You're saying I said in other words.
Yeah, I haven't figured it out. I don't think.
No, I think it's just that. It's what Christianity has done to the soul.
Well, in the feminine is matter.
For example.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, on the other hand, the solar consciousness does the same thing to the soul.
Because Christianity has been a solar religion.
But even before we get bring Christianity into it, he's got the Izdubar solar consciousness, which is, again, it does harm to the feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's how it works both ways.
Well, if we go back to the image where the new God image is born from the egg, there's all that smoke there, so we haven't really been able to see everything yet, because there's something hidden behind that smoke.
What smoke?
Remember when at the birth of the egg, out of the egg, the fire? There's
you're
all
thinking of that
smoke,
that
and he even talks about and mentions that.
When Gary, he uses the word soul here, are we already, those of you who are more complete in your reading than I am, are we already soul pretty well established as a definition of, do we kind of know what he means by soul at this point?
Probably not.
There was a beautiful definition earlier in the book, wasn't
was there?
Can you remember that? Does anyone remember?
I remember it, but I don't remember where it is.
Well, my working definition is it's the redeemed feminine. Power, patriarchy.
Oh, here it is. Oh. The soul is your own self in the spiritual world. I thought that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the transcendent aspect.
Was that a footnote?
That was on page 288.
Your own self in the spiritual world?
Mm-hmm. So I guess we just did it. 288, I have in my notes.
I bet it's a
here it is. It's at the top of the column, the right-hand column on 288, second paragraph, first sentence. Thus, your soul is your own self in the spiritual world. So,
I think he would have reset that later.
I guess it appeals to me poetically.
It's beautiful, but see, why emphasize the spirit world? Why can't it be in the material world? See, that's what he says.
Well, when he says, I suppose I think of the material world as, I'm thinking of the one world here, so that I don't separate the spirit from the, but here, like you say, he is emphasizing that.
Should we have a stretch?